Dr. Bill Riley, who's an associate professor at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health and who is chair of the Public Health Accreditation Board of Directors. He's my boss. And I'm Kay Bender. I'm president and CEO of the Public Health Accreditation Board. We'll be jointly doing the presentation. And we're letting you know that we have no financial relationships to disclose. We wish we did. That would mean we would have more money than we are, right? The session is set up to talk a little bit about the developmental aspects about this public health accreditation movement. That's the part where we'll kind of ask you where you are with, because, you know, we can spend as much or as little time on that. Many of you have a doctorate in that at this point, but we don't want to skip over if some of you want to hear a little bit about that. But most especially, what we'd like to spend the majority of the time talking about is the beta test that we just finished and what we're going to do with that information, a little bit of early sort of assumptions from that beta test. And then the one nuance to this presentation that if you've been to some of the others here at APHA about accreditation that we've not done before, is the piece that links accreditation to quality improvement. That is our cornerstone for what we're trying to do with public health accreditation and trying to make it different. And so we'll be talking about that. So let me get a little bit of a sense before we go through the first 8 or 10 slides of where you are on the learning curve. How many of you have already heard about the Public Health Accreditation Board, know what we've been doing in general, and would like to move on to the next conversation? That does it. Okay. So if there's somebody in the room who didn't know that and you're real disappointed that we're going with the will of the majority, Dr. Riley and I will be around afterwards, and we'll be glad to tell you the history. But here we go. We get to skip through to what we learned about accreditation benefits from the beta test. That's probably new information for some of you. We are contracting with the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago to conduct our formal evaluation of the beta test. And they're not quite through with that work because we just finished the beta test in 30 sites all across the country. But we have a peek at some of the early findings, and especially from the anecdotal comments. Just to be real clear with you, these comments came from the beta test sites themselves. Do we have any beta sites in the room? From the site visitors, that about 97 of those people who conducted site visits. We have site visitors in the room. Holy Scott, it's all on you today. And then from staff and observers, members of our board, and members of our national partner organizations who observe the beta test process. And so some of what we're sharing with you on this particular slide has to do with qualitative findings. And that is that while accreditation may be a little daunting for health departments to think about, oh, we have to go through learning about the standards and the measures and getting our documentation together. Maybe a little daunting while we're also trying to sort of bail the water out of the boat in tough economic times. We heard over and over again from the beta test sites, many of them, that it was actually a blessing in disguise because they used the process to help go through, it kind of forced them to sit down and go through the conversation about not only what is it that we have to be doing to call ourselves a health department, what is it that we can do in partnership with others, and that's fine. You know, maybe we could give up a little bit as long as we knew that there were others there to take it on and for us to continue to be in the loop to plan and evaluate with them. And then lastly, and maybe more importantly, what do we want our health department to look like on the other side of this economic downturn? We heard from more than one health department, weirdly enough, almost the same thing that we've heard from international, from countries who have asked for our standards as they're building a health department. Maybe they've never had one. And then the same thing that we're hearing some from some of the beta tests, when we recover from this economic downturn, we'd like to recover with a little bit different looking health department. We'd like to use this as an opportunity. And so what we've learned is that standards can be used to help set priorities in difficult economic times. We also learned, and we didn't ask these questions, these were the anecdotal, the process of preparing for accreditation via the beta test gave the staff something hopeful to work on. And there again, the comment about public health on the other side of the cuts. Seems kind of weird in a way, but we heard over and over from staff that, you know, there is life after all this work that we're doing. The other thing that we learned, and we heard this over and over and over again, is involving all the staff at all the levels, or as many of the staff as is possible given the size of the health department, gave them the opportunity to see where their program or their activity fits with the whole picture of public health. And I don't know about you, but when I was working in public health as a public health nurse, I started out in maternal child health because that was my clinical area, and I cared a lot about mothers and babies, and so that's what enticed me to the health department. And maybe I was just slow. I mean, I'm from the South. It's possible I could just been a little slow. Maybe I was preterm and, you know, had a few neurons missing. But it took me a while to figure out what it was that I was doing in maternal child health program work, working as a nurse and home visiting in clinics, what that had to do with anything about the public health department as a whole. And it was sort of on-the-job training over time. And what we heard from the beta sites is the more the staff they involved, the more the staff felt involved in what their part to their contribution to the mission was. And what we learned over and over again is leadership was the key element to success. When the state health officer, when the local health officer, when the tribal council leader, when that leadership level said, this is important and I'm going to support you, meaning you, the collective staff, in doing this, even though it was just a beta test, it was a key element to success. There are a lot of others of these that we learned. Those are the few that I wanted to talk about. I'm going to go through these pretty quickly because you all said you knew this stuff already. So, the title of this presentation is, what does the health department need to do to get ready for accreditation? This is also what we learned from the beta test. This particular slide is in a narrative on our website, and so if you're really interested in reading a little bit further, and there is also a flyer at our booth 1713. Appoint an accreditation coordinator. Now, we know that you don't have the funds to appoint somebody to be an accreditation coordinator and that be all they can do. We got that. If you do, that's great. Some of the sites we've learned who got the infrastructure funds from the CDC FOAs, that's exactly what they did with or planning to do with part of the funds. But either way, find somebody who can lead the charge toward getting ready for accreditation. That somebody needs to be a person who's well-organized, who knows where to go within the organization to get what they need for the health department to begin to prepare their documentation. It needs to be somebody who's empowered by the leadership. It's one thing that you have a real gung-ho accreditation coordinator, but what we learned through the beta test over and over and over again, you could tell in the first 5 minutes if the director of the agency and maybe the Board of Health chairman or somebody like that had said, we're going to do this and I want everybody to cooperate, made all the difference in the world. Now, I know there are textbooks written on those philosophies, but I'm just telling you that we saw it borne out in the beta test. Then many of our sites told us that it made the job a lot easier to appoint accreditation teams. And so whether they divided those teams by the domain areas or whether they divided the teams in some other way needed to be whatever worked for them. But the fact that they had a lot of different people working on things made the job a lot easier. I'm not going to embarrass you three ladies in the back at all, but if you'd like to come sit, we'd be glad for you to have a chair, but if you want to stand, you're fine. So now that I have embarrassed you, would you like a chair? I think they were being polite and they didn't want to interrupt, so yeah. And then those staff need to be familiarized with the standards and measures, the documentation guide, and then begin the process and all of that. And so one of the things that I want you to know, if you're thinking about getting ready for accreditation, is that because of that feedback, FAB will be, right after the first of the year, we will begin the process of developing some tools to help you with that process. For example, and I'd like to get a little feel for this, if you're thinking, how many of you are just thinking about accreditation? Is that why you're here? Or how many of you just, you're here because you didn't have anywhere else to go? Okay. Several of the beta sites said, especially the accreditation coordinator said, you know, it would have been really nice if we'd have had an 8 to 10 minute, really short DVD that we could show to those accreditation team members, potential team members, division directors and office directors and program managers within the department, within the health department, if we could have shown them, this is what you're about to get into, and this is what we need your help doing, that would have been real helpful. In retrospect, that sounds like a real no-brainer. It was such a no-brainer, it was not on our radar. But those are the kinds of tools that we will be developing. So we get asked the question, why haven't you done that already? We don't need to develop those tools until we've refined the process and done all the revisions and edits to the standards and measures from the evaluation of the beta test. Otherwise, we might tell you to do something wrong. And then you'd be really mad at us if you went through all that work. And of course, you will hear us say over and over again, the biggest thing to be doing right now, because it won't change, to get ready for accreditation is work on those prerequisites. Just begin that part. I've already pretty much spoken about the accreditation coordinators and how important their role is, and so I won't belabor that anymore, but later if you have questions, we'll talk about those. Just as a reminder, we do have 11 domains. We will stick with those domains. We don't have any early indication from the beta test there's any reason to change this level of work. Over and over and over again, we had health department site visitors to tell us, this pretty much does still describe public health. Does it mean that every health department in the country actually delivers this comprehensive array of services? No. And so in a little bit, I'll come back and address sort of the notion of cross-jurisdictional applications for accreditation, shared services, and some of that. What will change as a result of the over 500 comments that we got related to the beta test standards and measures are what's up under here in terms of the standards about how we, and the measures about how we document whether a health department is actually meeting each of those domains. For example, let's just look at inform and educate about public health issues and functions, domain 3. I just picked that one. We could pick any other one, but I'll just pick that one as an example. That's obviously has two major pieces to it. One is about how we educate the public about public health issues. And then there's also the component about how we communicate with the public about public health risk. One's kind of the health educator piece, and one's kind of the PIO kind of piece, although, you know, you don't really separate them that cleanly. Within those, we have standards that says you have a plan to do this, and give us two or three examples of when you've done this. What we heard over and over from the beta test sites, be a little more prescriptive. Don't have us select our examples. Tell us the kinds of examples you're looking for. And from the site visitors we heard, be a little more clear about when we think an example is a good one. You know, the site visitors did a great job. There were 97 of those guys with a lot of good, widespread public health experience, but we were not very prescriptive to them about how you evaluate the examples in that case that they looked at. Having said that, for FAB, it'll always be a balance about not being so prescriptive that we don't acknowledge the very creative approaches that many health departments have toward communicating with their jurisdictions about health, public health issues and risk. And so it'll be a real balance for FAB. The over 500 comments that we've received, just in sorting through those already, some good proportion of those are what we would call largely editorial. Clarify this, and we know ways to do it, or can you be a little bit more explicit there? And instead of saying, give us some examples, tell us if you want 2 or 20, those kinds of things. We think those are largely editorial. But a number of them are also more substantial than that. And those get to the question of whether a measure that we asked for was actually, it actually measured the standard that we were trying to measure, or in some cases the measure just wasn't written clearly enough. And in some cases, we got just good questions from site visitors and from beta sites about what difference does this make in the whole scheme of things. And we're taking all of those extremely seriously. That's why when we tell you it's going to take about 6 months for us to go through those and have our standards work group do the editing on those, it'll take a while to do that. But for those of you who are getting ready, what you can still look at is the spirit, the concepts, the basic content areas here, the concepts there won't change. And so we're encouraging health departments to still be thinking about that. And, you know, if you engage with the community, look at Domain 4, engage with the community to identify and solve health problems, and you've got a real good process for that and something really wonderful that happened and you've got great documentation for that, keep it somewhere. Go ahead and note it as applicable to Domain 4, and then you'll know where to find it when you get ready to put your self-assessment together for accreditation. You know what one of the hardest parts about being a beta site was? Finding all their good stuff. Can you imagine that? Think about your own agency, even the small ones. It was like, oh yeah, we did a really good thing for that domain. Now, where is it? You know, where can we find the best example of that? And so what some sites did is they gave us everything that they had ever said, written, or had a picture of for that domain. And the site visitor said, don't do that anymore. and we had one beta site that was so proud of a lot of their work that they actually asked us to upload, they asked for permission to enlarge the number of gigabytes that we had approved for uploading information into the online system. And when the tech person called, he said, the amount of information this site wants to upload is larger than the entire electronic version of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And I said, you know, some site visitors are not going to be happy about reviewing all of that. And so FAB's got to do a better job about training you as you get ready for accreditation about how to find the best, most concise, most appropriate evidence. That makes the job easier for you, and it'll make it a lot more expeditious for the site visitors. Lisa Giese's back there saying, uh-huh, I know exactly what. So the prerequisites we've talked about again. I can't say enough that community health assessment, the community health improvement plan, and the agency strategic plan. For those of you who've been in other sessions, I apologize that this is redundant, but I don't apologize that it's redundant, because these are the pieces that you're going to have in order to even apply for accreditation. And they're the pieces that we've learned from not only the beta test sites, but for many of you who've been engaged in these processes, take the most time. And so we've had no feedback that says we should do away with these. We do understand that there's still some confusion about how best to get them done. But what the beta sites will tell you, even though these weren't required to be a beta test site, for those who had already begun the process of and had some of this in place, it sure laid the groundwork for the rest of the standards and measures to emulate from. So we know that we need to do a little better job of saying to you, what's a good community health assessment look like? And while we won't recommend, you know, that X consultant or Y consultant or X university or Y public health institute is the best place to go, we do recommend that you go to the national partners, whether it's ASTO or NACHO or NIHB or Public Health Foundation or the National Network of Public Health Institutes. Those guys have been working with us, and they have some great sense about what it is that we'll be looking for. And we'll do a better job as we go through the next 2 to 3 months of saying these are the kinds of things that we'll be looking for. But go ahead and get started on the process, because you really can't go wrong, and these are very time-consuming processes as you engage the community. And how many of you work in state health departments? Okay. For the community health assessment, you've probably got more data than you'd ever need. The real challenge for you is going to be how to put it together to have some meaningful community health assessment that then will lay the groundwork for your accreditation application. There are lots of good templates out there, and ASTO can show you where those good templates are. And so you can contact Jim Pearsall's office, Lindsay Caldwell, Tom Briggs, that group at ASTO, and they can help you with that. Are this local health department people? Okay. Now, some of you may have access to the data. Some of you may have already gone through the MAP process and kind of done the assessment and your improvement plan with the community. But what we learned from the beta sites is sometimes the locals don't quite know how to get the information they need from their state health department, which is often the place where the data are housed. And so, you know, that takes a conversation or two or three. And Jessica Solomon's performance team at NACHO has worked some tricks with that. They're in conversations with ASTO about how to work through that. Do we have any tribal health department folks in? Okay. There's a whole different process for that. Other tips in the meantime, I've already kind of spoken to these, but I'll sort of hit a couple of points. All of the elements in the FAB accreditation documents that are currently on our website are subject to change pending the evaluation results, as I've said. What won't change are the things I've already told you about. So, you know, if you're setting aside that wonderful example that you think will go in domain 4, just don't go far enough to label it in your filing system, you know, measure 1.2.3, because in the new system it may be measure 1.1.1, and that'd just be frustrating. So, you know, just dump it somewhere where you can find it in that domain, and then you'll be able to pull it out and label it appropriately later. So the next 30 minutes or so, we'd like to spend time, Dr. Riley's going to walk through with you the question that we get asked, because it relates not only to domain 9, but it relates to the overall principles around which the public health accreditation program is based, and that is that we really aren't setting up a regulatory program. We don't want you to apply for and receive accreditation so that you get a nice plaque to hang on the wall and you can say we're accredited, although that's great. Especially if you get your picture in the paper along with that, that's really great, because that's good for you and for public health. But that's not what we're about. We're trying to develop a program where we work alongside you for you to identify those gaps and help you do a better job the next time around and the next time around. And those are the principles around which we're developing the program. Specifically from the beta test, domain 9 in terms of quality improvement is a new concept to public health. And so there's still a lot of gray fuzzy areas out there. That's going to turn out to be one of our weaker domains from the beta test, and that's not a surprise. And so Dr. Riley's going to start now and go over with you kind of what we're thinking about in terms of QI as it relates to public health. Bill?
Okay, thanks very much. There are lots of chairs up in front if anybody would like to sit down. I get tired just watching you stand, so feel free to come on up if you'd like. There's lots of confusion regarding what is quality improvement, and even more importantly, what is quality improvement in public health, and Kay and I are going to talk about that in a couple minutes. But several comments might be helpful to put it into a context, and those questions have been coming up quite a bit in the last couple days, and thankfully they have been. One comment is that quality improvement and accreditation are really used interchangeably a lot when it comes to public health accreditation. And it was a stroke of genius by the original developers of public health accreditation and the supporters, CDC and Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, to have accreditation and quality improvement point fingers at each other. So I was not involved with public health accreditation at that point, so I get no credit for that stroke of genius, but certainly Kay and others do. But what I have been doing is maybe the most avid champion of quality improvement in public health in the last several years. And the important aspect of quality improvement in public health is, first of all, that quality improvement has been used for decades in the most successful organizations in the world. General Electric, Motorola, 3M, Toyota, and all the really successful organizations use it, and they use it as the way they manage their organizations. And the other aspect that has been coming up quite a bit and has really been causing me to think more about it so that I can explain it today is, does quality improvement take time? And the answer is yes, it does. And but not taking the time to improve the processes in a public health department presupposes a number of assumptions regarding the efficiency and the effectiveness of public health departments that just are not warranted. So I'd like to take a couple minutes to talk about that. First of all, assuming that we don't need nor do we want to take the time to improve our processes using quality improvement in a health department assumes that the existing processes are performing adequately. Okay, so that's one assumption. Secondly, it assumes that existing processes are deliberately planned when they are originally created. Okay. It assumes that public health processes don't deteriorate over time. And it assumes that process performance in a health department are stable and capable. And stability means that a process doesn't have special cause in it, that the performance in the future can be predictable. And capability means that the process is performing at the user expectations. And the user would be a stakeholder or a client or the customer or the community. And then finally, it assumes that all processes in health departments are standardized. And what that means is that all staff follow the same process once it's been designed. And I've been in hundreds of health departments in the last few years, you know, working with them, and health departments are taking to quality improvement like a duck to a water, or like a fullback on a fumble. And in terms of client recertification of disability, clients, restaurant inspection, WIC program, just about every area that you can think of in a health department, the departments that Kay and I and others have been working with are achieving what we call breakthrough improvement. And what breakthrough, when I was a CEO, we were always happy with incremental improvement. You know, if we get 2% increase in revenues or a 1% decrease in cost or a little change in client satisfaction or whatever, we were happy. Well, quality improvement is not happy with incremental improvement. Whenever we embark on a quality improvement process, we're looking for what we call breakthrough improvement. And breakthrough improvement has at minimum 25, 50, 60, 75% change in performance in a short period of time. And all of the quality improvement projects that I work on in public health achieve that. So, what is quality improvement in public health? A couple of us have spent a lot of time trying to define that in a way that's going to make sense to you, especially the people who are running public health departments, because if it doesn't make sense to you, it's not going to make sense and it won't be applied. And there are lots of good definitions of quality improvement in other industries, but what we wanted to do was make a definition that makes sense for health departments. So what is quality improvement for a public health department? And Kay and I have talked about this a couple times in the last couple days because it comes up a lot. Quality improvement is different to just about anybody who uses it. And NACHO and ASHTO and others have been doing surveys over the last 5 years or so and more. And 98% of the respondents from the health department say, yeah, we do quality improvement. Well, that's, and well, no, they don't. So they might be doing something that's, what they're trying to do is improve performance, but it's not quality improvement. So quality improvement is the use of a deliberate and defined improvement process. So what that means is that when a health department decides that it's going to do a quality improvement project, it's using one of the QI models. And there are lots of different QI models. So not, one is not good or better than another or less preferred than the other. The model that is chosen depends on what kind of process that the organization wants to improve. So the different models, and you've heard these names before, Geron model, the Deming model, PDSA, the model for improvement by the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, that's the one that is probably most relevant for public health departments. Six Sigma, Lean, Baldrige Award, and so forth. So there are lots of different improvement models. But if you're doing a quality improvement project, then first and foremost, it needs to be using a model that has been developed and has been proven over time. Okay, then it's got to be focused on an activity that is responsive to the community needs or improving population health. And for Kay and me, and literally the hundreds and the thousands of people who have been working on public health accreditation, that is what gets us up every morning, is that the original developers of public health accreditation and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and FAB have concluded, and I think it's just an extraordinary insight, is that the single most important way to improve the health of the population is to improve the performance of health departments. And the best way to improve the performance of health departments is through accreditation and using quality improvement. So all the activities that we work on in health departments in quality improvement are some way focused with either improving the process of what the health department is working on or actually improving a community outcome. And that's tough to do because you know the metrics aren't there and and there's such a lag time between an intervention and when there's a change in the health of a population. But one of the advantages that public health has is that there are so many evidence-based interventions that public health can do that as long as we get process performance accomplished, we know, we can infer that the outcomes will eventually be there. Like for example, if the population activity levels of 30 minutes a day goes up 5% over a couple years and then 5% a couple years later, eventually that's going to decrease the obesity rate. So we know that that's true because the evidence is there. So the use of a deliberate and defined improvement process, it's focused on activities, and what an activity means is a process has to be defined. And if, when you are doing quality improvement, if you haven't defined what process you're going to improve, then it's not quality improvement. It might be something else, but it's not quality improvement. And again, that's the genius of the people who developed control charts and process maps and so forth over the last 80 years, is define the process that's going to be improved, identify all the process steps, and then start examining the performance of each of those steps. And if you're not getting the performance that you expect to have or that you think you're supposed to have, then that's where the quality improvement opportunity comes in. So based on that previous definition, actually, this is the next sentence in it. So next is quality improvement in public health is a continuous and ongoing effort to achieve measurable improvements in the efficiency, the effectiveness, the performance, the accountability, the outcomes, and other metrics that a team might identify for services or processes. And the purpose is to achieve equity and improve the health of the community. So that's the definition of defining quality improvement that we are proposing. And And I have no doubt in my mind that this is going to be refined and improved over the next couple of years. But we wanted to have something to start with. And this is the definition of quality improvement for public health that we are starting with. And as all of us get more experience, this definition will become obsolete and we'll get a better definition for it. So a couple characteristics of quality improvement. One other concept that I wanted to touch on is the difference between professional knowledge and what a fellow named Deming called profound knowledge, or it's really process knowledge. What Deming pointed out, and I think correctly so, is, and it's very, very relevant in acute care, in healthcare, and in public health, which is, or in the industries that he worked in with engineers and so forth, that in our case, a physician or a nurse or an epidemiologist or an environmental engineer and so forth, they are professionals. They are extraordinarily well trained at what they do, and they know that their field extremely well. That's professional knowledge. What they don't know is the knowledge of the process. How does a process work in order to achieve the goals that they are trying to seek? And even if it is a good process, if you've got 40 people in a health department and they're doing it 40 different ways, it's not a process. It's not standardized. So the whole issue about quality improvement is how do we supplement the professional knowledge of the different members of a team with the knowledge of the process? And that leads to small QI and large QI. And we made this distinction because there's a lot of, again, confusion about what is QI and where do we do it in a health department. So small QI refers to when you identify a process that you want to improve, appoint a team or empower a team to improve it, and then go through the process of improving it. So it's a program or an activity level, and it's almost always cross-departmental. I've seen very few processes in a health department that don't involve more than one department. And I've never seen a process in a health department. I have never yet seen a process in a health department that the director of the health department accurately understood how that process worked. Nor in a hospital, nor in a medical group. And that's one of the issues about a process map, is the first thing that we do when we work with the health department in terms of after they've identified what process they want to improve is, okay, let's enumerate the important steps in that process. And I will go to my grave before I see a team come up the first time with how that process actually works. Because as soon as you map out how you think that process is working, somebody's going to come in and say, well, no, that's not, yeah, we used to do it that way 4 years ago, but we don't do it that way anymore. Or, yeah, we're supposed to do it that way, but it doesn't work, and we do a workaround. And it's not until you actually get in and get the users of a process engaged in actually auditing the process so that they all learn together how the process works that you can improve it. So that's all small QI. And then large QI is the really exciting part of it, which is ultimately the way I view large QI is it's when as a result of a series of process improvement activities that one team and then another team and then another team and then multiple teams throughout a healthcare organization or a public health department continue to do small QI, eventually the organization embraces it as here is how we're going to manage this organization. And again, the best companies in the world manage their organizations according to a QI model. Because otherwise, again, in the organizations I ran, we might have 400 or 500 managers, and they would all manage their way. They wouldn't all manage the same way. So unless we have a common language and a common knowledge in terms of how we're going to improve the processes, we don't have a standardized way to run the organization. So moving from small QI to large QI, or small QI to big QI, will eventually result in transformational change. And that can be done. I did a study of police departments several years ago, and I didn't know anything about police departments, but I knew a lot about QI. And a lot of the police departments in this country use QI as the way to manage their police department. And what's interesting about it is there's a lot of overlap between a police department and health department. They're government organizations. They have civil service. They can't control the what's going on in the community. And yet, police departments have done just a remarkable job in terms of using quality improvement for how they run their police departments. So transformational change in terms of getting the whole organization working in quality improvement, and that isn't going to happen in a year or 2 years, it takes several years to do, is start with a couple priorities. And again, in the QI projects that I work on, they always start them too broad. And so it's real important to get it narrowed down into something that the team can improve. Create a sense of importance. Urgency is probably the wrong word, but create a sense of importance for measurable results, because if we don't have the metrics to show how the process is performing before and after, then we don't know if we've done an improvement. Engage every staff member who's involved in that process. And this is important, is what I started with, is how do we build quality improvement into how we do our work? Because otherwise, and again, I'm here to tell you that most organizations don't build QI into how they do their daily work, and therefore the process performance is not as efficient or as effective as it could be, nor is it as efficient, as effective as our stakeholders expect it to be. So how does quality improvement interdigitate with accreditation? The process of preparing for and achieving accreditation provides a lot of information to the agency about where it's performing well and where it might want to improve. And once the agency gets that information through the self-study of the accreditation standards, it can start focusing on where it wants to start using the quality improvement. And that's it. Okay, I think we can now open it up for questions. All right. Please.
When you're talking about quality improvement, I know you're looking at this process, for example, and you want to see if you're able to improve that. But if you don't have any measurement of what you're doing now, what would you suggest? So if you go for a period of time and you start measuring it, and then CPRS asking me.
Good question. So the question, just to make sure everybody heard it, is involves metrics, and how do you have the metrics to show that change is occurring? I'll start answering that by prefacing it, is that actually I'm not going to preface it. I'm going to go ahead and just start answering it. Can you give an example of what you're thinking?
Well, okay, I don't know. Let's just take one of the programs where maybe we're seeing clients and they're saying, really the activity process we're using. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And saying, well, how many are you using now? Well, we don't really measure that, but we just feel like there's some inefficiencies and we can do that.
Right.
We want to know what we're doing now. We've never measured it.
Okay. Usually you can get that kind of information off your billing system or your accounting system. And so so you're asking the right question. And either you should be able to go back if you're looking at restaurants inspected or clients served or whatever, go back a month in your accounting system or 2 months and then get the daily average and then use that as your baseline. And one of the important techniques in quality improvement is what are called control charts and run charts. And what they do is look at the performance of a process over time rather than just two periods of time. We don't look at before and after. We look at how is the process performing every day. So you can get a month trend or a week trend or whatever, do your intervention, and then watch how the trend changes. And then if it doesn't change the way you expect it, then run through another PDSA cycle. And if it doesn't change, do another PDSA cycle. And eventually, as you continue to study and understand the process, the performance will start going up. And I'm glad you asked that for another reason, too, because that's why what we call rapid cycle improvement is so important. In rapid cycle improvement, we try an intervention the next day or this afternoon. And sometimes, so once we've got that intervention where the team thinks that it's working, then we might try it out for a week. But I can't tell you how many projects and organizations I've worked with where they think that it's going to take about a year to get something done, and that's not QA. If it takes a year, it's inefficient and it's ineffective and it's going to fail. So you should be able to do these projects in days and weeks rather than months and years.
I'm just thinking there may be an extraordinary need for training for mm-hmm. state mental health departments. This is all so new. Mm-hmm. And, you know, without that training, I think, and you know, they're not going to be able to hire consultants to come in the way you do often, I think, in industry, mm-hmm. you know. We're going to get very uneven quality improvement efforts. So is there an initiative being undertaken in that?
Well, okay, Jack, I'm going to put you on the spot, so just get ready. Okay, because I'm going to start, but then I'm going to call on somebody that I know is in the audience that can speak to a piece. Yes, it's a budding field, as you adequately described, in public health. And, you know, as Bill talks about, he's done work to try to move what we've learned in healthcare and other industry into public health. But there is an enormous learning curve, and FAB understands that, too. One of the initiatives that's been going on for the last 4 years, Lee, 5 years, multi-state learning collaborative that the Robert Wood Johnson funded, what had two really major focus, and one was to begin this learning process around quality improvement and introducing quality improvement models and learning to apply those with a learning collaborative. Those have been extremely successful. There are a lot of articles written and published about those. And as that project wraps up this next year, I guess those leaders, Lee Thielen sitting by you is one of them, so I'd encourage you to talk to her, are in conversation about what next and how to continue that learning community around QI. So Lee, I don't know if you want to say any more to the audience about that. Okay, all right. So we do have a lot. What I can tell you as somewhat of an external observer to that process is any MLC sites in the room? Okay, Liska's one. So there's another one that you can talk to who's kind of been through this. It's painful to start, I think, of course, because it is new information. But, wow, the momentum that has, you know, I guess the first conference was with the first grantees. And the conference they did this last year, there were 44 states represented with 250 people there. So that's one piece. And we kind of hope Robert Johnson will continue to provide forums around which you can come and learn and whatever. Now, my other colleague in the audience, Jackie Carden, works for the Public Health Foundation. And that's another great partner who's done some work around performance management and quality improvement. So, Jackie, do you want to just talk about what PHF has to offer?
I think I could just piggyback on something that Bill said, and that is about the standardized process. Because one of the things that I think we know is that we need to build that practice-based evidence. There's a lot of stuff going on out there, but because we don't document our processes very well, we don't know how well we have an opportunity to improve. So one of the things that the foundation is working on, particularly with some states on rapid cycle improvement, like Bill mentioned, is looking at, you know, where are the opportunities for some replicability. And there's certain things that if you standardize a process and you begin to integrate these, as Bill said, you know, beyond one single project and throughout a department and divisions and everything, that once you build that culture of quality improvement, you're kind of firing on all cylinders. And so I don't know, I think the evenness that you're looking for,
Lyska?
Just to add to just a very practical resource, the pocket guide that will help Jack and help you with exactly what
the memory jogger.
Memory jogger, the pocket guide from QI is a great resource if you haven't seen that. I mean, our experience really was don't wait for the perfect training, just start doing some, and Bill talked about doing a process map. That is something all of you guys can do, and it's a start at QI. And I think my encouragement from a state that's been struggling with finding perfect training is to do, just start doing some of those pieces. And those pocket guides and memory joggers have been a resource for people that want something, a print resource to look at. So.
And Lyska, before I move to Lee, Lyska, would you also, while you're talking, speak about how you guys created the time and the interest in this QI piece at a time when your state, like a lot of others, they're just cut and busy and all that. So what got people so interested at the level?
Yeah, I'm a state employee in Wisconsin, and we really had most of our interest, frankly, from our local health departments. I think that what has motivated them has been, more importantly, the improvement piece. They recognize that they need to look at what they're doing, look at the standards, have a frame for what they do, and we really started this project using the NATO standard, so having the 10 essential services, and having people look at that, and then decide from the 10 essential services where they needed to improve. A couple years into it, we got the standards together. What's motivated people really is to have a common language and have some targets to work on some things, and I think sounds a little mushy, but that really has been where people at the local level and the tribal level in our state are
particularly. Lee?
I'm not sure if I'm stealing something you were going to say next. That's why I was kind of stalling. Your national associations are a great source of help.
Yeah.
NASCO and NHO now, particularly, and APHA, of course, is always a good resource. NHO has been phenomenal. If you go to their website, the materials they have available, the presentations they do, very, very good. It really takes us all very seriously, quality improvement, parents, and preparation. The project that Lyska and I have worked with over the years, the Multi-State Learning Collaborative, there are a lot of materials on nnphi.org website.
I'll go back to that slide. We talked about that before you came in. Not what you're talking about, but just I'll go back to that slide so you can see all of these.
One of the things you